comes the, here comes the, here comes the.
Y'all don't really want it like that.
Yeah. Here comes the.
Downset Hut, Junkions, and welcome to a very special episode of Junk Food Cinema, brought to you by FilmSchoolRejects.com. Dot mustache. I am, of course, Brian Salisbury, and I'm joined, as per usual, by my friend and co-host. He's a novelist, he's a screenwriter, lieutenant of Megaforce, definitely the best tailback in the game, Mr. C. Robert Cargill.
He makes mad films, can't make films that if I did, they'd have a samurai.
They would have a fucking samurai. And this is Junk Food Cinema, which is, of course, the cult and exploitation film cast. We've got the shakes that'll make you quake. We've got the fries that'll cross your eyes. And we got the burgers that'll quarter pound you. Thank you, Cheeseburger Eddie, for giving us the inspirational words to open this episode. And inspirational is what I hope comes across in this, because this is, as much fun as this is going to be to talk about, the inspiration for not only this episode, but the entire month of programming, is that we recently lost a legend. And especially a legend around the hallways of Junk Food HQ.
Yes. We are, of course, huge Burt Reynolds fans. And we came up with a pun so delicious, you'd think Brian thought it up. And Brian is kicking himself that he didn't. But welcome to Octobert.
Yes.
Where we are going to talk about some of the best Burt Reynolds stuff we have not talked about yet. Some
Octobert,
of our favorites.
Octobert, alternately titled Turd Ferguson season, depending on where you come in on the loving of Burt Reynolds. And I'm super excited that we're kicking off with this sort of double feature, this comparative episode that I don't think we've done since we compared Death Race and Death Race many moons ago.
We wanted to do one. For years we had slotted one where we were going to do Space Hunter versus Metal Storm.
That's still going to happen.
That's still going to happen. We've just never made it work because the idea, I mean, two 1983 3D movies that are essentially the same, one of them good, one of them not, one of them really not.
Yeah.
But this is different. These are two good movies, one a remake of the other, both with Burt Reynolds in big roles, and both really good in their own rights.
And I have to say, one that I had only seen the remake of until recently, this was actually a blind spot in my Burt Reynolds love. And we're, of course, talking about The Longest Yards, both of them, the original 1974 and the remake in 2005.
Burt Reynolds, the electricity that turns on the most outrageous team in football.
I need some alone time to think about our future.
Do not get one scratch on my car.
Just when Paul Crewe's life couldn't get any worse.
I hope they like this.
It did.
Paul Crewe, the wrecking.
Anybody who is pro football's most valuable player has got something special.
Did you ever do it standing up?
All right, let's move it.
A hero so special, he gets special treatment.
You're gonna put together a team of inmates to play against my guards.
I just wanna do my time.
Your time here will be a whole lot easier if you just participate.
Some Jet Li shit.
That's gonna cost you.
Looking forward to it.
He assembled the meanest, dirtiest team in history.
He broke it in my nose.
Let me see it. We can fix this.
How's it look?
Straighter, more distinguished. Kind of like a young Michael Jackson.
I love little Michael.
I want every prisoner in this institution to know what I mean by power. And who controls it. Let's do it.
I want you to lose.
I can't do that.
Suit yourself. Spend the next 25 years in prison. Go!
The guy is scared. Scared of you, sick, degenerate convicts.
Adam Sandler, Chris Rock, and
Burt Reynolds, Eddie Albert, in The Wildest Yet. The Longest Yard.
And what I find very interesting about this is what I didn't know watching them back to back is how faithful the remake actually is.
It's really faithful, down to several lines of dialogue that are repeated. In fact, that's one of the only flaws of the new one is that by repeating some of these classic lines of dialogue, the director tends to step on them.
Yeah, and we'll see. I feel like I didn't just watch them back to back. At one point, after revisiting the remake and then finally seeing the original for the first time, I then did a thing where I started playing them at the same time, where I actually watched one on the TV and one on the phone, and it was crazy. It's not quite Gus Van Sant Town. It's not quite Psycho just being
it's
a
not shot,
shot
for shot.
No, yeah. It's not shot for shot. And there are actually some things, you know, don't at me, bro. There are some things that I think the remake actually does better. Than
it's
the original,
true.
That we will talk about. But the best thing, the best call I think the remake makes on 4th and 10 is to bring back Mr. Burt Reynolds to play not Paul Crewe, but this time play the seasoned football veteran on the team who was in the original film. Of course, now I'm blanking on it as I failed to bring up my Indaba. But so you have Burt Reynolds returning to a different role in the remake. And for those of you who have seen neither of these films, I will say that the plot revolves around a football player named Paul Crewe, who is he's called washed up a couple times, but really he's disgraced. He is a football player who was kind of thrown out of the league for point shaving, throwing a game to make money, very ugly business. And he has a fight with his girlfriend, and I could be, and again, I'm describing both plots here because they're following, one follows the other so well. Gets in a fight with his girlfriend, steals her car, ends up, you know, going to jail, and a shady warden has a team of his own guards. And now that Paul Crewe is here at his prison, he would like him to be the new coach. He kind of turns that down on the urgings of the captain of the guards, who is like, I don't want you to coach. You will say no. And it's just a big mess.
And what's really important is that in both versions, the warden has pulled strings to get him to this particular hellhole of a prison. And this captain of the guards, who is the current coach and currently runs things, doesn't want him to do it. And creates this awful environment for Crewe. Crewe deserves to be in prison. Crewe is a fuck up. Crewe is a guy who has a lot of things wrong with him, both personally and in both cases legally. He is a fuck up. But what he doesn't deserve is this particular level of hell. And the warden and the captain of the guard are just shitty people.
Oh, yeah.
Shitty, shitty people that put him into an unwinnable situation, and it goes very, very wrong very, very quick.
And what ends up happening is that Paul forms his own team to play the guards in a sort of cleanup game.
The scrimmage.
Yeah. He forms his own team of convicts that, as both movies will tell you, they may not have the most talented team, but they definitely have the meanest, as they put together the most dangerous convicts to play against the guards, and chaos ensues. And there you have it. And all leading toward the big finale, the big game, which in the original, which was where we'll start, takes 47 minutes of the runtime.
Oh, yes. No, the original movie, there's very little prison going on. Mm-hmm. Like, it is mostly the game. And the game is vicious. And the game is where all of the cards are played and things get really fucked up. Whereas in the remake, it's mostly about the training.
Which is interesting because the writers, we need to talk about this first and foremost, because this is one of the strangest aspects of this, is that the writers of the original are also writers on the remake and also writers on a 2001 movie that I saw on the shelves at the video store where I worked for years and thought, wait, isn't that just The Longest Yard? It's a movie called Mean Machine.
Yes, which is the British remake of The Longest Yard.
Which is, yes, it's a bunch of guys.
Starring Vinnie Jones, right?
And Jason Statham, actually, are both in the movie. And then I come to find out they wrote that as well. So these guys have been dining out on their idea for The Longest Yard for a very
For the longest time?
The
longest line. Oh, wait, no, that's not it. The longest.
We get sued all the time. Now I just want Billy Joel to sing the entire plot of The Longest Yard. Like, that's got to be a thing now, where he just records a whole album of his songs, mostly just one, encapsulating the entire plot of The Longest Yard. Both The Longest Yards. That's this episode title. What were we talking
about? Paul Crewe is an innocent man. All right, that's a deep cut. That's an old man Cargill joke. I'm sorry.
Man Cargill,
that old man Cargill.
Suddenly I want sarsaparilla. I don't know what's going on.
Everybody wants sarsaparilla.
That may be the oldest thing you've ever said. But yeah, so they have like written and rewritten, and you know, when I saw their names attached on IMDb to the remake, I thought it had to be in the same way that you see in other situations, like characters based on or story based on. But no. These guys just wholesale rewrote their own script with one other person and came up with the remake.
Did they rewrite it with one other person, or was that person hired to rewrite their script based on the original script?
Potato. I actually don't know. That's a very good question.
But what I will say is, by getting credit on that movie, they got paid and they get residuals, which is, that's where the money's at, baby.
Speaking of money, The Longest Yard remake is the second most successful sports comedy of all time. The first is The Waterboy. So Adam Sandler is apparently, say what you want about the guy, the king of successful sports comedies.
That guy makes so much fucking money.
Yeah.
He knows his audience. And that's why, apparently, you know, since we're talking Sandler.
Because we can't avoid it.
I have a friend who agreed to be in one of Sandler's movies. Adam called him up and said, hey, we just had somebody drop out of this movie. Can you come and play this role and be here for 2 days? And my buddy was like, yeah, of course. Anything for you, Adam. Yeah, no problem. I would love to show up and just do this next week. He goes, great. So I'll have my people call your people. And about 5 minutes later, his agent calls up and goes, did you just agree to be in an Adam Sandler movie for $100,000? And he was like, I agreed to be in it for 2 days. And his agent goes, yes, for $100,000, because Adam Sandler takes care of the people in his film. He takes care of his friends. He shares the wealth. It's why everybody who works with him will bend over backwards to work with him again. He has an audience he plays to, and that audience loves him. And then he does his serious film so that people like us go, oh, hey, he's not a total waste. Like, yeah, no, I love Spanglish and
Punch Drunk Love.
I have a personal soft spot for Funny People. I absolutely love Funny People, where he's actually satirizing himself, but he does that.
If you love Funny People so much, why do you do this podcast with me? Self burn.
I have no comment. So he does that. And then, you know, he does these movies that he just goes off with his friends and makes movies and has fun and tries to set them in locales where they all kind of want to hang out for 3 months. And then his audience eats it up and everybody else complains. And so be it, but everybody makes money and everybody's happy doing it. So, you know, this is one of his really good ones though. There is a run that he did, from the mid to late 90s, particularly when he was working with Drew Barrymore, because a lot of his good stuff was with Drew Barrymore. And then he did this, which I've been, you know, always, I've really always liked this one. And he's got some good stuff in his resume, but I think this is one of my favorites of the Sandler catalog.
Yeah, and he definitely does take care of his friends, by evidenced by the fact that Nick Swartzen still sleeps in his basement. I'm pretty sure he's a guy that definitely.
I don't believe Nick Swartzen sleeps. I think there's something fundamentally wrong with that man, and I will never ever forgive him for that movie.
You heard it here first, Junk Food Cinema exclusive. Nick Swartzen doesn't sleep. What?
Have you seen that movie, Bucky? God, what was it called?
Oh, wait, is this the, this not, oh, no, you're not thinking of Dickie Roberts, because that's David Spade. You're thinking of,
Bucky's, the Nick Swardson movie. The movie where they're like, we're going to make Nick Swardson a star.
Yeah, they kept trying to do that. There was an ugly, ugly period of time where Nick Swardson was in far too many movies. And
you mean more than one?
Was in a
Bucky
movie.
Larson. Bucky Larson. I saw that shit in a theater, and it is some of the.
It's one
of the most painful experiences I've ever had in a theater. It was just it was like the only three people in that audience were me, my wife, and Will Goss.
It's like, and someone drilled open my skull and shit the memory of that movie back.
Oh yeah, now it's back. Now, the guy who becomes a porn star.
You.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Yeah. I'd rather watch three seasons of the Andy Dick Show than watch that movie again. And that is
You know what? I'm with you on that.
Yeah,
and I'm 100% with you on that.
I'm not happy about it. I'm just saying that's what I would rather do. That being said, one person I can watch all day long in any movie, regardless of, because
Burt fucking Reynolds.
And then our friends at 80s All Over have mentioned in their loving tribute that the guy was in a lot of bad movies.
But oh, yeah.
There is not one Burt Reynolds movie I will not watch start to finish, because Burt Reynolds has his real talent is making nonchalance look like an actor's choice. Like, that's really what he does, is he drifts onto a set, has so much fucking fun that you're just with him the entire time. And it's evidenced by the fact that you still love the guy, despite the fact that this movie opens with some pretty horrific domestic violence on the part of Burt Reynolds. And granted, it's a woman that is being physically abusive to him as well, but Jesus Christ, like, he takes her down worse than some of the Mean Machine guys take down some of the guards. Like, it's fucking nuts. But Burt Reynolds always had this ability to look like he was having the time of his life, no matter what he was making, and just that laugh. Anytime you hear that laugh of his, you know, the I'm so in for this.
He's got that Matthew Broderick, John Cryer, I know how to look right at the camera and talk to you with a look. That is just fantastic. When he would break the fourth wall, he shattered the fourth fucking wall, and you were in. You were just in. No matter how stupid things got, no matter how Cannonball Run 2 gets, when he turns and looks at you, you're just like, yeah, I'm there. I'm in. You know, I mean, we're talking about a movie where Abe Vigoda is in a fucking Wile E. Coyote sketch. Like, that's how bad that fucking movie gets. And yet still, the moments with Burt Reynolds are why you fucking watch it.
I will watch Burt Reynolds in a chicken suit. Guys, I'll do it.
Stroke race, baby.
Don't you dare me, because I'll fucking do it.
Oh, I love Burt Reynolds. Michael Ian Black was recently talking about the fact that he was on something with Burt, and that Burt walked up to him and just introduced him on set and said, "Hi, I'm Burt Reynolds. I used to be famous." And which is the most Burt Reynolds thing you can fucking say.
So what's the movie? While we're on at this sidebar. What is the movie where Burt Reynolds, it was like big enough to star Burt Reynolds, but was also the point where Burt Reynolds probably wasn't famous anymore? Do you know what I mean? Like, the last leading Burt Reynolds vehicle he got where it was like, oh, that's kind of the end of the Burt Reynolds. For me, it's probably Cop and a Half. I feel like that's, because that movie opened.
That's up there.
That movie opened big. And I, even to the, like, even as a kid seeing it, I was like, what is this? What even is this movie?
What is that smell?
What is that smell? Yeah, because I think it's just Burt Reynolds wanting to hit that kid the entire time, just like we.
I don't know if that's off. You know. Let's see where he went off the rails.
Because I mean, even later into his career, you still got movies that jump out like Sharky's Machine that are still fucking great. But then you also have movies like. Malone,
you know where I think it is. I honestly think it's like, you're right in that it's Cop and a Half, but I think what it is when he went to TV and did a TV show for several seasons with Evening Shade.
Oh, okay.
And all of a sudden he wasn't a movie star anymore. He was a TV actor, and he was a TV actor on a sitcom. And it wasn't a bad sitcom. It had a pretty great cast. But I think that may be what it is. From, you know, 90 to 94, he did Evening Shade. And then all of a sudden, he was just a TV guy. He wasn't that movie star anymore. And Cop and a Half was his last, you know, His last one of those. And then he would come back every few years and do something else. Because he did... Because that's at the same time because he did BL Striker and tried to make
that
happen.
That's the one. Thank you. I was trying to
The one season one. Isn't that Ozzie Davis who's in
that
with him?
Yes, because I just saw the fucking opening for that. Very much in the style that you and I discovered, or at least reminisced about old TV shows. I came across the opening to that. I was like, I'm sorry, Burt Reynolds and Ozzie Davis were in a television show together and nobody fucking told me.
Yeah, it was a crappy detective series like on CBS in like 1989. Like it wasn't any good.
Still want to see it. Brian over here still wanting to see that.
But I think that's where it went off the rails was he was just because he had done a couple of good movies and he was still doing good stuff. I mean, like one of the other ones we're going to talk about this month that we already talked about is we're going to talk Switching Channels, which is a favorite of mine and which he's great in.
And then, of course, his huge comeback with P.T. Anderson.
Right. Which he hates.
Can we sidebar within the sidebar for a second?
You can't. Whoa. You do not cross the sidebars.
Sideception. How the fuck does everyone involved with that amazing movie talk shit about it? I do not understand this.
P.T. Anderson's a weird dude, one thing.
But the movie, like, look at the finished fucking product,
guys. Finished fucking product is a work of genius that offended a lot of older folks, you know?
Including, apparently, Mark Wahlberg's parents, because he has never let that movie live it down.
He has not. Also, if you were Mark Wahlberg... I mean, I get why Mark Wahlberg hates it. Like, of all the people that hates that movie, Mark Wahlberg, imagine being in a movie like that, and every time you go out with a girl, they want to see it.
Yeah, that'd be terrible. I can't even imagine going out with a girl who constantly wants to see your dick. Terrible predicament for Mark Wahlberg.
And is disappointed every fight. It doesn't matter if you're sporting, you know, 7.5 inches of wood. All of a sudden, it ain't that 11-inch fucking monster.
You think that's what it is? Oh, my God, that's what it is. Oh, my God, because I just put it together what a fucking frat boy douchebag he is and why that's exactly the type of thing that would make him start saying these... Oh, my God, that's what it is.
It makes sense, doesn't it?
Oh, my God, that's what it is.
It's like holy the rest of his life. Every time he goes to sleep with a girl, it's not the one she saw in the movie.
He's like, feel it. That's crazy. We just solved the mystery. But why Burt Reynolds? Burt Reynolds got nominated for a fucking Oscar. People were talking about Burt Reynolds again.
He hated that movie. He not only hated that movie, he said he wanted to break P.T. Anderson's legs.
I feel like he said that about a lot of his co-stars, including the kid from Cop and a Half. Let's be real.
Well, I think he did break the kid's leg. I mean, if we're being real here.
That kid did not have the Webster seats.
I think they started out as triplets and ended up twins.
I think what it is that kid, everyone thinks now that he has the Webster disease, but it turns out Burt Reynolds just broke his legs and stunted his growth. If we're going to spread apocryphal stories, that's going to be
He's dead. What's
one.
He going to do?
The kid from Cop and a Half is dead? Oh, we shouldn't have brought that up.
His career.
Oh, Burt Reynolds. Yes. Sorry, this is not intended to be shitting on Cop and a Half. Welcome back to Two and a Half, which is a podcast where we just talk about Cop and a Half for 2.5 hours.
I love that you're shitting all over the Henry Winkler directed movie.
Is that the only one he's directed? Please tell me it's not. Like, please tell me the Fonz got another chance to direct after. Cop and a Half is just a memory for me because I remember my aunt taking me to see it in Chicago and it was like a big deal. Like I remember I saw that and like Kindergarten Cop. Oddly, that was a year for kid cop movies for me.
I love how this is the period of time where we took all of our beloved TV actors and let them direct shit.
Yeah,
because that's because there's a movie you want to talk about next month that was directed by Spock.
Which movie is that? No, you can say it.
It's Three Men and a Baby.
Oh yes.
Yeah. What is the name of the month that you are proposing for next month?
We Are Goot.
We Are Goot.
Steve Guttenberg retrospective.
Yeah.
I think now more than ever. I know we're still at the fucking sidebar. Shut up, Tracy. Shut up. I know. I don't know who Tracy is, but she's very offended right now.
You should have just yelled at Meryl.
Sorry, Meryl. Shut up. I call Meryl Tracy sometimes. Don't worry about it. Don't read into it.
Don't make it weird.
The thing is, Steve Guttenberg now more than ever needs defending after 80s all over, completely shit all over Police Academy. Like, I'm sorry, I feel even more compelled to do an entire month on Steven. I'm calling him Steven because I'm being formal. Steven Gutenberg needs his own month of retrospective. We are Goot, goddammit.
Stefan Gutenberg,
which I thought would have been his name after Can't Stop
an the inventor music. Of the printing press.
We owe the complete inception of the written word to Stephen Johannes Gutenberg. That's what I'm trying to tell you. It's three men and a bold set typeface. What the fuck were we talking about? The longest.
I was actually going to answer a question of yours that no, that is not the only Henry Winkler directed film. There are two. The other is Memories of Me starring Billy Crystal.
So this has been the longest diatribe, and now back to the longest yard. I want to tell you something about the remake of this film.
Tell me something about the remake of this film, Brian.
It was in heavy rotation in Brian's dorm room. I dug the shit out of this movie, and not the least of which because I am a very weird hybrid in that I am a complete nerd and a rabid football fan.
And also half cicada.
It's true. I will shed my... It is gross. It makes a lot of noise, but I will shed my skin
That was an 80s All Over deep cut for those of you not listening to 80s All Over. And if you're not listening to 80s All Over, you should. They are good friends and deserve your ears.
Their opinion on Police Academy notwithstanding.
Oh, their opinion on Battle Truck notwithstanding.
Battle Truck.
Their opinion on Megaforce notwithstanding.
I feel like they're the older brother of our show that knows better.
I do love how, though, whenever they cover one of those that they know we love, they're like, all right, we're going to give them a shout out despite the fact we hate this fucking movie. Go listen to them talk about
it. This is the type of movie they would like, which yes. is never meant as an insult, but probably should be taken as such.
No, I'm not going to take that insult. I'll take that as a fucking compliment. Goddamn right, I love Battle Truck.
Yeah, now I just want Bobby to come in and do all of the Battle Truck stuff.
I want Bobby here too. Bobby's the best.
He will be a guest. We've been talking. He will be a guest on one of our with his mouth, not just with his sound effects.
Wow,
he
will Brian. Be
here. What?
Wow.
Wow. Two men and a Bobby. Look, don't worry about it. Bobby and a half.
So the Star Grove
again. Star Grove. Longest Yard remake. I was a huge fan of it because. The way they shoot football action in that movie is fucking outstanding. It's something that I think...
Both movies, they do it.
But the original does it differently. The original very much is a product of the 70s in that the sports action is very organic. It's very constantly moving. And it's not... There's, for example, the only music that you hear in these moments is, diegetic to this. There's a marching band in the background. Things are just kind of moving at a constant pace. You hear the roar of the crowd. It feels like watching football on TV. The remake feels like watching football through Zack Snyder's eyes. It's all very stylish, and there's slow motion, and there's all of these...
And it's dark, and all of our mother's names are Martha.
Why did you say that? Why did you run that play? No.
We just lost our three DC fans. Damn it. They hate it when we make fun of the Martha thing.
But our Parasite 3D fans are still with us.
So they really are.
So thank you for sticking around, guys. But I mean, that's one of the things I love about the remake is that it finds this really slick and stylish way to shoot all of the football scenes so that the hits feel like lessons in physics and all of the plays just look brutal and awesome. And I feel like what the original does is far more of that very organic, very... natural 1970s type of style that you could apply to any genre applied to watching a football game.
Well, let's talk about the big difference between the two movies. There is one principal difference between the two movies that fundamentally makes them different and makes them worthwhile to watch back to back, watch separately, have to choose one over the other. Say, I like this one better. Or that doesn't fucking matter. They're both great. They both do different things. The Longest Yard, the original 74, is essentially Cool Hand Luke with football.
Yes, thank you.
I mean, that's exactly. All it is. It's like prison sucks. They're going to try to break your spirit. And this is a guy who will not let his spirit be broken. And in both movies, they play with the same element of the guys selling out their team, but selling out the team to protect the team. Like right. He's come to care about these people. He redeems himself and takes the sin, the burden of Moses upon himself. Like that's the thing. And in the first movie, it's very dark. The first movie is dark as fuck. It's got its fun moments. It's cool. It's got a little light comedy in it, but that movie is just dark and badass and just very much Cool Hand Luke. And I guarantee you that's where the inspiration came from.
Yeah.
The 2005 is a sports comedy. It's got zany characters. It's got over-the-top bits. It's got walk-on, cameos by a number of interesting fucking people
yeah.
that we'll go through here in a moment. But it is very much, hey, you're coming to enjoy this story and laugh. And yes, we're gonna get the pathos of the story right, but we're going to make this version more fun. And both versions are great because of it. Like as much as the second movie is very much the fucking first movie, it's not tonally the same film.
Right. And I'm so glad you mentioned that, because when you said earlier that there's not much prison in the original, my immediate thought was there's not a lot of prison. There is a lot of Cool Hand Luke.
Yes.
Because we literally have a scene of wiping it off here, boss, you know, rolling one up here, boss, you know, getting some water, boss, like, very, very fucking Cool Hand Luke. And it used to illustrate how shitty that, and I think this is something that the remake actually doesn't touch upon, to illustrate how shitty the work program is, so that when players discover that they could play football instead, it's more of a draw.
Yes, it is. It's everyone's like, we're going to get off work detail and we're going to get special meals. Well, fuck yeah, I'll go ahead and do this. And I get to hit the guards as well.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, and I think one of the things I thought was interesting is I was worried that revisiting the remake, there were things that weren't going to hold up because they are troubling. And then come to find out, they are just ports over from the original. One of the things I always thought was probably not going to hold up very well about the remake was the transsexual cheerleaders. And it turns out that's in the original as well. It's not played up for nearly as much over-the-top laughs, but they definitely have transsexual, not only transsexual cheerleaders, but like a transgender like girl group, like the Supremes. Like it's crazy.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's not really played up for laughs in the final version, but there was a lot more of that apparently shot. And then they cut it out, thankfully, because it really some of the stuff that I've heard about or seen little bits of was kind of tasteless, whereas in the ultimate films, no, it's just dealing with the fact that, you know, there are transgender people in prisons,
right?
And they sometimes go full on.
Yeah.
And you know, and this is they're playing around with it a bit more. In the original, it's just kind of like, wow, this is kind of a crappy girl band they got. Oh, these aren't girls.
Yeah, it's like the big surprise is, guess what, they're dudes. And in the remake, it's like, what if it was Oz but funny? So they kind of go that route with it, which is interesting. And then the other thing I thought was going to be a little bit problematic is just the rampant use of the N-word. And what breaks my heart about the remake is the guy using the N-word the most is one of my childhood heroes. Because we need to talk about the cast of the remake specifically. Because the remake has a real fucking salad bar of great character actors, professional athletes, and professional wrestlers. So much so...
Wait, hold on. Let's go back a second so you can process that. And professional wrestlers.
Who are, yes, professional athletes, but living on a different planet. Let's be real. This is the only movie that I'm aware of that has both Bill Goldberg and Stone Cold Steve Austin. And what broke my heart when I first saw it, what breaks my heart every time I watch it, is they cast it in that Goldberg is the convict and Stone Cold Steve Austin is the racist ass guard who drops N words like Cargill drops names. It is unfortunate how much it happens. And especially to me, who grew up knowing Stone Cold Steve Austin as the ultimate face. Like, he was never a heel. He was the ultimate face because he was a face who didn't give a fuck either. He was going to do whatever he wanted, but he was always going to take out the bad guys. And when he's just like dropping N-bombs at Nelly, because I forgot to mention rap stars are also starring in this movie.
So let's go through how crazy this cast is.
How crazy is it?
So we've got Adam Sandler, who's taking Burt Reynolds' role. Burt Reynolds comes back as Nate Scarborough, who is the older guy who oversees him in the first movie.
Right.
You've got Chris Rock, Nelly, Michael Irvin. We've got Bill Goldberg, Terry Crews.
Oh my God, can we talk about how I wish that the original had somehow had Terry Crews, because he is such a fucking like plus for the remake. Like if you're charting it and you're keeping score, in the big win column for the remake is Terry Crews.
You've got Bob Sapp, you've got Nicholas Turturro, you've got Dalip Singh, who is
the great Khali. Again, professional wrestlers.
Yeah. You've got let's see here. We've got David Patrick Kelly, for fuck's sake. I can't believe we've gotten this far without talking about the great David Patrick Kelly, who those of you longtime listeners know is a deep fried favorite of ours.
DPK!
We have talked about so many of his fucking movies. And he's got this brief role here doing what he does best, just being a sleazy, smarmy little shit.
Yeah.
Tracy Morgan, of course, as one of the transgender cheerleaders. We've got William Fichtner.
Oh God, I love it. Playing the role that, I gotta say this, in the original, that role, the Captain of the Guards, is played by Ed Lauder. I had no idea how old Ed Lauder was, because I still see him in movies from like the late 90s, and he looks exactly the same as he did in 1974.
And isn't he, Ed Lauder appears in this as well, at the golf game.
Yeah, in a cameo.
Of course, we've got Brian Bosworth.
The Boz.
Steve Austin, a.k.a. Stone Cold.
You're goddamn right, son.
By the way, Stone Cold, little hint about a brief aside we're going to take from Bert Tober next week, might be a certain movie named Stone Cold.
And I don't know. Be starring a certain other actor, quote unquote, that you've just mentioned.
It might be starring Brian Bosworth.
The Boz.
This might be how we're tying in something that one of our junkions has.
Don't worry about it. We got it covered.
Yeah, but take a big old fucking swig, because that's coming up next week.
Toss me a couple Coors. Let's take some swigs.
James Cromwell as the warden. Cloris Leachman.
Yeah.
As, you know, and here's, in a brief aside, because this is the only thing to mention here, this is one of the interesting things they did with this movie. In the original, in order to get some game film, Burt Reynolds had to sleep with
Bernadette Peters.
And the whole thing is like, really? That's what I have to do? Sleep with the hot girl with the beehive? And in this one, they're like, yeah, you need to sleep with Cloris Leachman. You need to sleep with someone who's in her 60s, young stud. And I love how they turn it on there, where it's like, oh no, this is not the male fantasy. This is you're being prostituted for this.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really interesting thing. Of course, it's an Adam Sandler movie, so of course Rob Schneider shows up.
And the other interesting thing they do is that they make Caretaker black, and he's played by Chris Rock.
Yeah.
Which I think is absolutely fantastic. Because the Caretaker in the original movie is played by Michael J. Fox's dad from Teen Wolf.
Yeah.
Very odd. Sorry.
Yeah. We've got Jim Rome.
Yep. And Chris Berman.
Yep. Chris Berman. this is, and of course, as we mentioned, Ed Lauder. Like, this cast is.
And Steve Nash and Bill Romanowski. Like,
big boy.
Yeah. Like, fucking half of, I want to say, oh God, what is that group? D12. Half of D12 is in the basketball scene. It's like, it is the weirdest fucking mix of people that they have just thrown into this.
Yeah, it's like they just, I feel like it's one of those things that they're like, look, we know what this movie is. We know who this movie's appealing to. Let's just go nuts. These characters, and this is a smart thing. And here's what I want to talk about. What's so fucking smart about it. When you are making a film and you have characters that are literally going to be on scene maybe once or twice in the whole movie, they need to have importance to be there. And if they're serving a plot purpose, if they're a brief small thing, get somebody famous, get somebody who can act, get somebody who's good at what they're particularly doing there, so that the audience immediately identifies and goes in with them. If it's a fun movie like this, is a movie where you're just supposed to be having fun. It's a remake. At the time it came out, it was a remake of a film that had, you know, was 30 years old. 31 years old, I think, all in. And it was, you know, something that was sports fans all knew this film. And it was like, let's have fun with it. They made an Adam Sandler film out of it and then just loaded it with fucking cameos. And the thing is there's so many cameos, I doubt any single audience member recognized all of the cameos. Like, they're just from such different, radically different pools. Like, to recognize every single cameo in this movie, you have to have a deep knowledge of sports, wrestling, and rap culture.
And let's go real deep and real relevant to this show. So there's a scene where Nelly, who's playing the running back, and by the way, sells it really well that he's an actual running back. Like, I believed every second of that. But there's a scene early on where he's running and he runs out of his shoes, and Adam Sandler and Burt Reynolds go over to like pick up the shoes. There's an extra standing right behind them. Ricky Williams, former University of Texas running back / NFL player, Ricky fucking Williams is just hanging out on set because why the fuck not?
Is that the Ricky Williams I think it is? The one that got bounced for marijuana?
Yeah.
Yeah, the one who was like the big local UT sports star.
He was a fucking god.
He was. And
decided he liked weed more than football.
He liked weed more than football.
And honestly, it wasn't even like a nefarious thing. It was just like, you know what? I think I prefer weed and I'm going to fuck off to the Nepal.
Yeah, and everybody in the league gave him a hard time. He's like, fuck you. It's not performance enhancing. Like, what
is if you can get that many yards and be high as fuck, you deserve two trophies. But, that's all I'm going to say.
But, you know, the NFL has always been the NFL.
This is very true. And that's, I mean, maybe that's why I prefer watching prison football in this movie, is because I think the rules make more sense sometimes. But yeah, there's also an anecdote about Michael Irvin playing a joke on Bill Romanowski in this movie that I don't think is a practical joke so much as a attempted murder. And it's that there's a scene where Bill Romanowski headbutts a locker. He's like, I'll see you on the field. And he headbutts the locker and it dents. And apparently when they first filmed that, Michael Irvin replaced that collapsible prop locker with a real locker. And I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure that's just an attempted murder and not a practical joke, but I guess in the story, it's labeled as a practical joke. So, fun times, apparently, on this set, filming at a real prison. But also, big props to Adam Sandler, because I think it's a really tough thing for, like, movie stars to do. Guys that are very recognizable movie stars to kind of step into the role of playing a professional quarterback. I think it works to varying degrees in movies that I even like. Like, I love Keanu Reeves and I love The Replacements, but there are times when I don't necessarily buy him as a professional quarterback, but I buy
except that he's a washed up quarterback. You know what, why the fuck have we not covered The Replacements yet?
Cover The Replacements.
Oh, god damn it, we need to cover that movie,
the movie where Gene Hackman couldn't be bothered to be in his own medium shots.
Yeah, where they had it, they had Gene Hackman's body stand in the movie. That, by the way, was so, like, we'll get there eventually, but I sat down and talked with Jon Favreau about that, about how much I loved that movie, and he was just so disappointed in it because they were pitched, it was supposed to be a rated R comedy like Slapshot, and then the studio decided it needed to be PG-13, so they cut out so much of the stuff they were proud of, and of course missed the boat because that was right there at the dawn of the rated R comedy return.
Yeah.
So, you know, Jon Favreau would go on to be part of all these R-rated comedies as a result. But yeah, so
but what's interesting is the remake is very much a PG-13 movie, and I don't feel like it suffers for that.
It doesn't, because the original doesn't need to be rated R. Like, that's the thing, is the material is good, and the, you know, since it's sports violence rather than regular violence, and you just kind of pull back on the swearing a bit, and bam, you're good to go. You know, you don't need that many F words to make a film funny.
Yeah.
And you can make it PG-13. This is not a movie that needed gratuitous violence or nudity. So being a PG-13 comedy, you know, because the comedy was all from, you know, it didn't need to be raunchy. It was like, no, we're a bunch of guys who don't get along trying to put a team together. That, you know, that we're underdogs. That is the type of story that sells itself. So it works.
And I think that's another interesting thing about the original, because it's directed by Robert Aldrich, who famously also directed The Dirty Dozen, a personal favorite around these hallways. But
I don't know what you're talking about.
What I find fascinating is I feel like the remake is more focused on the putting the team together sequences.
Yeah.
It's more focused on, I guess it's more, it has, I have to keep in mind that the original was made before the inception of what I now come to expect from movies, and that the great sports movie montage was not really something that existed in 1970.
It wasn't part of the language. Sports films were not a huge thing. I mean, keep in mind, this is how old this movie is.
How old is it?
The The Longest Yard is so old that when it was released, it was just after Super Bowl VI.
The Longest Yard is so old that back then a 2-point conversion was only worth 1 point. Actually happens in the movie and fucking weirded me out. Instead of taking the field goal, they run it in and they only go up by 1 more point.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa, what?
Yeah.
What? They just fucking kick it. Why wouldn't you just kick it? There's no difference. Anyway, so yeah, it's old. It's definitely.
But that's what I'm talking about is, you know, professional sports outside of baseball were just, you know, and baseball was still like it was just hitting its heyday at that point. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that's where baseball really became like the big televised national pastime. And so there wasn't yet language for these movies. And that language would be perfected, you know, shortly thereafter. But also I think it's very different. I think the idea of the remake was let's take everything great about the original and do something slightly different. The original was very much man versus authority. It was very much a metaphor for, you know, battling fascism, mm-hmm. like battling what was wrong. You know, these douchebag white guys who are in power are using their power to abuse other people. And you know what? I may not be a good guy, but I deserve better than this. And fuck them. And I'm going to stick it to the man. And the entire thing about the football was sticking it to the fucking man. Yeah. And that's what's great about that movie. And in 2005, that wasn't really the thing, you know. I think if we were to remake it today, it would be, you know, now that we're dealing with people who are, you know, openly pro-fascism again, you know, something that was not okay 15 years ago, you know, something that wasn't okay 50 years ago, you know. Now that we're back to, hey, you know what, fascism's not the worst idea in the world, maybe now, you know, a thing where it is man versus fascism would work. So what they did is they just had fun and they were like, look, let's have a good time. Let's make a movie that's about like what would have been really cool to see in the original is how tough it is to put this team together and all of these great personalities on the team. Like, that is a failing of the original. In the original, they have this amazing scene, where they go in to this fucking psychopath. Like, he is in solitary confinement. He is a dangerous motherfucker. They have this great scene with him. And then what does he do after that? Fucking nothing.
Yeah.
We have this great character actor who, by the way, is the same character actor from a movie we talked about a few years ago called Hard Times.
Yep.
He's like one of the big boss fighters in Hard Times. Fucking great. Nails this fucking scene. We never really get to see him play around. We don't have the fun and games portion of that with him. And so what they do in the remake is, hey, let's have that character and then let's have some fun and games with that character, because they do. And they do a really great job with it, you know?
They literally introduced one of my favorite things about the remake. They introduced the Great Khali with the exact same approach as they introduced Garland Green in Con Air.
Yeah.
Where it's just like handcuffs swinging and bow, bow. Like, it's like, oh shit, you know, this guy's a badass because. Because
he's got his own fucking guitar section.
Because fucking Don Simpson already explained this to us, that when we hear the electric guitars, when we hear Hans Zimmer playing in the background, this guy has to be a badass. That's how it works. But the original has guys like Ray Nitschke, you know, real, and some other real NFL players. It's got Richard Kiel, you know, a famous cinema big man who I will always love as Jaws from the James Bond movies. But I feel like the one thing they were missing, and maybe this is just my idiosyncrasies, not one Jim Brown, not one Fred the Hammer Williamson. Guys who were not only big at the time, but were former football players.
Jim Brown may have been too expensive at that point.
You think?
He was like, well, I mean, at that point, he was a star.
Yeah.
And Fred the Hammer Williamson was just then beginning. I mean, this is at the beginning of blaxploitation.
Yeah.
So we did not have a lot of big blaxploitation stars yet. It would still be another 2 or 3 years where anyone outside of Richard Roundtree was recognizable as a blaxploitation star. So, yeah, no, I mean, it feels like they should be there, but it really is just a hair too early.
Yeah. I'm just saying, think about what the original would have been like if it had at least Jim Brown or Fred the Hammer Williamson, if not both.
Oh, fuck yeah. Fuck yeah. Or how cool it would be if it were Pam Grier instead of Bernadette Peters as the secretary.
Yep. All of this. Check.
We can dreamcast this all we want for 1974, but, you know, they did what they did. I mean, keep in mind, Burt Reynolds was so not a big star yet, he didn't even have his mustache.
Like, they shave it off. At the beginning of the movie, he has it, and then they make a big deal, almost like, you're in the army now, kid, of shaving off his mustache. And can we talk about how eerily different Burt Reynolds looks without that mustache? He looks like 30 years younger.
Well, yeah, because he had a mustache of a 60-year-old man when he was 30.
he had the mustache of a Yukon prospector.
His mustache was so manly, it used to leave at night to go drinking with Hemingway. That's just what that was.
His mustache jumped Snake River Canyon ahead of Evel Knievel. That's how manly that mustache was.
How manly was the mustache?
Why is Johnny Carson such a big part of this episode? I'm very confused, but I'm also kind of enjoying it. Let's keep it a thing.
Anybody remember what I was talking about?
How have we gotten this far without making a Lonnie Anderson joke? That's what I'm curious about.
That's a really good question. Although, now that I'm thinking about it, Pam Grier playing the secretary, the line about your hair looks like spider webs seems oddly racist.
Well, that would not have worked. Like, that was definitely the Bernadette Peters, you know, making fun of beehives.
Because she's got the giant Texas hair. That's what I think is so funny. She's because I've been driving to, like, really awesome dive barbecue places and seen women, 6-year-old women with that exact haircut to this day. That is a very Texas haircut. But I also want to point out that there are many references both in the original and in the remake to Florida State, even though the original film was shot in Georgia, because that's actually Burt Reynolds' alma mater.
And that's where the lights went out.
In Florida State? I mean, when they got beat by Auburn, yeah? Oh, no, you meant Georgia. Got it. Yes, absolutely. That is entirely where the lights went out. Hey, that actually reminded me of something.
Good.
So they talk about that song in Reservoir Dogs, and one of the actors we have not mentioned that's in the remake is Eddie Bunker, who plays Mr. Blue in Reservoir Dogs, who I always feel like if he's in a movie where there are criminals or there's a prison, he lends a certain amount of authenticity, because this is a guy who was not only a professional bank robber, but wrote books about his experiences in prison that became several movies. One's called Animal Factory. The one with Dustin Hoffman, I believe, is called either Short Time or Doing Time. And he's just written a lot of the kind of seminal books about the American prison.
Yes, he was the Danny Trejo before there was Danny Trejo.
Precisely. He was the older Danny Trejo, as it turns out. And he's got a great moment. He's kind of the moment that turns Paul Crewe around, where he's like, you know, when you got sent away for 20 more years for punching the warden, was it worth it? And he's like, it's worth every goddamn second of it. Like, I love that moment.
Yeah. That's the thing about this movie is all about, there's no winning for these guys. That's the thing, is at the end of this game, they're going to be in prison and they're going to go back to the way things were before. And they're going to go back to these guys being hard ass fucking jailers, beating the crap out of them, treating them like shit. But the whole point of this movie, both movies, and the whole point of this story is for 2 hours of game time, they get to be men again. They get to stand tall and be proud and be who they are. It's like that great scene from Shawshank Redemption where they're tarring the roof, you know, and it's just like for three glorious days, we were men. We could have been they're drinking beer and they could have been doing it at any of their friends' houses. Like, that's the whole point of it. When you are treated like a lesser for so long, that brief moment of freedom to be able to stand tall is worth everything. And that's what the win of both of these movies are. And that's what's so glorious about these movies, is it is about human triumph. It's not about winning or getting the girl or winning the big game. It's about your pride. It's about not giving up. It's about being there. And it is fucking fantastic. Both versions fucking nail that perfectly.
I feel like to a certain extent, that's a little bit of what The Replacements is about too. Because at the end of that season, all those guys know that they're going to have to go back to their shitty lives.
Oh yeah.
But just to be in that game and, you know, compete and feel like superstars for that little bit of time. Like, it's actually, now that I think about it, there's probably a lot of The Replacements that's inspired by what's, you know, that whole.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No. It absolutely is that. Like, it is The Longest Yard, but it's, you know, it's, they're doing it just for that moment in the sun, as opposed to, you know, doing it to, you know, to stick it to the guards.
Right.
But yeah, it is that's one of those great stories that we love. We love the story of having that moment to get to have personal triumph, that it does not result in any real life goals or move you forward. But for that small period of time, you are the person you believe yourself to be and the person that you can be.
Yeah. And by the way, we kept mentioning the writers that were the same on both the remake and the original. One of the writers is Tracy Keenan Wynn, son of Keenan Wynn, who has come up quite a few times lately as an actor from movies like Piranha.
Piranha. And
with almost Perry White in Superman. So very big 78 for Keenan Wynn. But his son, Tracy, is actually one of the writers on the original, the writer on the remake, the writer of Mean Machine, will probably be the writer of the next iteration of The Longest Yard that comes out, because I feel like at a certain point, this is just going to start to get Seven Samurai territory, where we're just going to kind of remake it and retell the story. And yeah, and I'm okay with that, quite frankly, especially if it has as killer a soundtrack as this remake had, because, again, heavy rotation for College Brian.
I will have to ask you, you know why they called The Longest Yard remake Mean Machine?
Because that's the name of the team.
The metric system.
Oh, God damn it. You know what? When you said, do you know why they called, I thought about making a joke about Quarter Pounders, and I was like, no, that's silly. And then you did it. So it's great. Oh, it's a very hook and ladder joke. I really appreciate that.
Stargrove!
Which brings us to the junk food pairing.
I think this one's a no fucking brainer.
I'm gonna let you go first then, because you say that a lot, and I'm always wrong, so...
No. I feel like, you know, we did not spend enough time talking about Terry Crews.
Yeah, okay, then we're on the same page.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, McDonald's Quarter Pounders... And, you know, and make sure you stuff them down your pants.
Yes.
Along with the fries, and then bring them home and sit down and eat them when they're still warm, but not warm because they were warm under the heat lamp.
Yeah. They're warm under the Terry Crews heat lamp.
That's right.
Which, by the way, under the Terry Crews heat lamp is definitely
it's my favorite nominated novel.
I was going to say it's a biography I want to read. Absolutely. But yes, cheeseburgers from Cheeseburger.
Cheeseburger, 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 Pepsi.
That is entirely what I was going to go for.
Of course you did. Like I said, it's a no-brainer for this one.
I love that there's a scene where he's literally celebrating by just throwing them into the stands.
I feel like if you want to do both of these, then the way to do it is to do it with some McDonald's and pair it with a nice Schlitz.
Yes.
I think a nice Schlitz in a can is, you know, that is where you get your longest yards, like, merging. That's where you cross your streams.
What's interesting is that the original was one of the first movies to heavily feature product placement. And one of the things that definitely gets a front and center product placement is PBR. There is a giant fucking billboard for PBR.
Well, then do PBR instead of Schlitz.
Or do both. And just have yourself a good old boy night with some.
Have yourself a good old boy Christmas.
And that's the end of the longest episode on The Longest Yard that has ever been recorded. And I hope you guys have appreciated it. If you would like to hear us do more of this and maybe less Johnny Carson, because we just figured out how to do it tonight, you can go to our back catalog on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio. You can also follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema. Like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. And if you really like the show...
Yes, that is correct, sir.
If you like it more than Terry Crews likes cheeseburgers from McDonald's, you could... Which, by the way, bullshit. If you've ever seen Terry Crews without his shirt off, that guy has not eaten at a McDonald's since 1975.
I would like to mention, though, that, you know, prison does weird things to a man, so...
So your two options, by the way, for prison are you become one of the transgender cheerleaders or you get really into McDonald's. Apparently, I did not pay enough attention to the Shawshank Redemption, but I'm going to go back.
What the time I spent in prison, I was a mixsexual.
What does that even mean? You know what? I don't want to know. Keep your nuggets in your pants. I don't want to know about your McSexual.
You don't want to know about my six-pack McNuggets?
I don't want to know how you got quarter pounded. I don't want to know who was doing the quarter pounding. That's not my business.
Do you want me to explain a McGriddle to you then?
Patreon.com/junkfoodcinema if you want more of that.
It's got syrup, you see. In the buns.
Sometimes jelly. The point is patreon.com/junkfoodcinema because clearly you want to hear more of this.
I don't know why you'd want to hear more of
this. For you to do that.
Yep.
You know what? I'm just...
This is one of those episodes, my friend. It's just one of those episodes.
I had an ending, but I'm just going to throw up a Hail Mary and, oh, look, here's the stop button.
That's about it for me. You got anything?